Hi, this is Ruth McCauley returning with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area. And we begin with some of the recent death notices that appear in the Decatur Herald and Review. Clara Mae Berry, 68, of Decatur, passed away on Monday, August 3rd, in her home surrounded by her family. Services to celebrate the life of Clara Mae Berry will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, August 7th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. Friday before the service at the funeral home. Burial will be at a later date. Memorials may be directed to Oak Grove Church of the Nazarene. William H. Bill Case, 95, of Decatur, passed away on Tuesday, August 4th, at his home surrounded by his family. Memorial services to celebrate his life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 8th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service on Saturday at the funeral home. Memorial gifts may be directed to Golden K. Kiwanis Club of Decatur, care of Jim Burchy, and that's Burtschi, at 4549 Hale, Hale, Drive in Decatur, 62526. Joseph R. Joe Cates, 83, of Springfield, passed away on August 2nd at Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. Cremation rites will be accorded by Bish and Son Funeral Home, a memorial mass celebrated by the Reverend Clint Honkomp, OP, will be held at St. Aloysius Church at 2125 North 21st Street in Springfield on Saturday, August 29th at 10 a.m. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions can be made to the American Lung Association. Cecil Warren Denton passed away August 4th at Memorial Medical Center at 11:11 a.m. Visitation for Cecil will be held on Friday, that's tomorrow, August 7th, from 5 to 8 p.m. at Mott and Henning Funeral Home in Athens, Illinois. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, August 8th, at 10 a.m. at Mott and Henning Funeral Home in Athens, Illinois. Services will be officiated by Pastor Flo Scott of Greenville United Methodist Church. He will be buried at Walnut Hill Cemetery in Williamsville, Illinois. Marilyn Green, 83, formerly of Decatur, passed away on Monday, August 3rd, in Illini Heritage Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center in Champaign. Services to celebrate Marilyn's life will be held privately with family, and entombment will follow at the Star of Hope Mausoleum in Decatur. Roger P. Hempstead, 85, formerly of Eddyville, Kentucky, passed away peacefully on Friday, July 3rd, with his loving wife of 64 years, Winona, and his family at his side. A memorial service to celebrate his life is scheduled on August 8th at Grace United Methodist Church in Rockford at 11:30 a.m. with a luncheon to follow. Memorial gifts may be given to the family for the Cadiz Christian Church in Kentucky in Roger's name. Fitzgerald Funeral Home and Crematory, Mulford Chapel, is assisting the family. William R. Hinkle, 92, of Moroa, passed away at 1:25 p.m. on Monday, August 3rd, at his family home in Moroa. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, August 7th, at Calvert Funeral Home in Moroa, with the pastor Nick Showalter officiating. Burial will follow at Moroa Cemetery. Friends may call from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Friday at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made to DMH Hospital or to the Moroa United Methodist Church. Donald E. Stoddard, 82 of Nokomis, passed away on Tuesday, August 4th at 10:40 a.m. at Hillsboro Area Hospital in Hillsboro. A funeral mass will be held on Monday, August 10th at 10 a.m. at St. Louis Catholic Church in Nokomis, with the Father Dan Willenborg officiating. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery in Nokomis with graveside military honors. Visitation will be held on Sunday, August 9th from 4 to 7 p.m. at St. Louis Catholic Church in Nokomis. Arrangements are being handled by the Sutton Funeral Home in Nokomis. Joanne Swinger, 75, of Weldon, Illinois, passed away at 5:58 a.m. on August 4th at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 8th, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, Illinois, with the Reverend C. Don Farrell officiating. Burial will follow in Weldon Cemetery in Weldon, Illinois. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Terry L. Heath, 75, of Decatur, died at 7:29 p.m. on Friday, July 31st, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Thursday. That's today. I'm sorry, I'm just noticing this. At Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur, burial was scheduled to take place at Macon County Memorial Park in Decatur. Memorial donations may be made to the Macon Resources Incorporated in Decatur, Illinois. Deborah Sue Nichols West, 57, of Atwood, went to be with her Lord on Monday, August 3rd. Graveside services occurred earlier today, that's Thursday, August 6th, at the Mackville Cemetery in Atwood, and visitation was held last evening at the Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home in Atwood. Diana Dean Queen, 71, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, July 26th, at St. Mary's Hospital, surrounded by her family. Funeral services to celebrate her life will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, August 7th, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service there. Burial will be at a later date. Memorial donations may be directed to the family to be designated at a later time. Joanna Elizabeth Spracklin, 90, formerly of Shelbyville, died at 6 a.m. on Monday, August 3rd, at Willowbrook in Effingham. A mass of Christian burial was celebrated earlier today, Thursday, August 6th, in Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in Shelbyville, with a Father John Soame as celebrant. Visitation occurred on Wednesday evening in Howanyaki Funeral Home in Shelbyville with a prayer service. Burial is scheduled to take place, was scheduled to take place in Glenwood Cemetery in Shelbyville. Memorials may be made, given to Immaculate Conception Church Building Fund in Shelbyville, Illinois, or to Poor Handmaids of Jesus Christ in Donaldson, Indiana. Bernice E. Stahl, 94, of Mount Pulaski, passed away peacefully at 8:38 a.m. on Monday, August 3rd, in Vonderleith Living Center in Mount Pulaski. Private family services will be held at a later date. Funeral services have been entrusted to Frick Calvert Trader Funeral Home in Mount Pulaski. Memorial donations may be made to Zion Lutheran Church or to Zion Lutheran School of Mount Pulaski or to Vonderleith Living Center. Mary Elizabeth Welsh, 92, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, August 2nd, in Fairhaven's Christian home, surrounded by her family. A massive Christian burial was celebrated earlier today, August 6th, at St. James Catholic Church, and visitation occurred an hour before that service. Burial was scheduled to take place in Calvary Cemetery, and the family requested casual attire for both the services. Memorials may be directed to Saints James and Patrick Catholic Church. The family of Mary Elizabeth Welsh was served by Moran and Goebel Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Decatur. We're turning now to some of the letters to the editor and editorials between the two different newspapers, but we're sticking right now with the Decatur Herald and Review. This editorial carries the headline, "Criticizing New Jobs Sends the Wrong Message." It ain't much. That was the inexplicable reaction Decatur City Council member Bill Faber gave to the announcement this week that Convey Health Solutions Incorporated expects to bring 300 to 500 jobs to Decatur. Instead of welcoming the news that the former StarTech facility in Fairview Park Plaza would be used once again, the recently elected Faber said it wasn't that great of a deal, with some bad grammar thrown in. Convey provides phone support for some of the county's most well-known insurance companies. The company hires entry-level workers, but there are also supervisory and technical jobs, and its workforce is a mixture of full-time, part-time, and seasonal workers. The company will begin hiring immediately with a job fair next week and hopes to have the initial hiring and the office open by the end of October. When fully staffed, employment could reach as high as 500. Here's what Faber said in an interview aired on television. They're generally low-entry wage jobs, and the turnover, from our understanding and my investigation of the history of this company, is that there is rapid turnover of staff. Faber went on to say the announcement does little more than maintain the status quo, since it replaces the jobs that were lost when StarTech closed. If we had jobs that were paying middle-class wages, this would be a wonderful announcement, he went on to say. The men and women that are working so hard to bring in jobs are rightfully proud of this acquisition, but when you get down to it, when you look beyond the curtain, it ain't much. How disappointing. It's premature to judge what sort of employer Convey Health Solutions will be in Decatur, in a community with traditionally one of the highest unemployment rates in the state. Jobs are a welcome addition. And although Faber seems to dismiss entry-level jobs, most successful people began their career at entry-level jobs. Those type of jobs are called opportunities. This addition of jobs will have a significant positive impact on the community, adding millions of dollars in payroll. This is also a part of a growing momentum indicator and could lead to other economic development news in the future. Convey officials said they were impressed with what Decatur had to offer and the available labor pool. Instead of welcoming the news and the new company, Faber decided on the negative, to focus on the negative and throw cold water on what has been seen as positive news for Decatur. It was an unfortunate choice of words. Silence would have been a better option. Our next editorial was appeared at the Washington Post, and it carries the headline, Why Teachers Aren't Treated Like Sports Stars. Last week, a Comedy Central skit called Teaching Center, about the career moves of star educators in the fictional 2015 teacher draft, went viral. In it, two Sports Center-like anchors lavished adoring attention on a system offering multi-million-dollar salaries for high-performing teachers, astronomical cash incentives for high test scores. In the case of star teacher Ruby Ruff, $40 million. Screen crawls compared competing school SAT scores on writing, reading, and math. The internet put its collective hands in its indignant hips and said, well, why don't we treat teachers like pro athletes? Imagining that if we treated teachers like sports stars, our education system would be just as awesome. Aisha Harris at Slate gushed, like so many others. The clip cleverly reimagines athletes as the educators we entrust our children to every day. The best part of Teaching Center might just be the incredible ads dropped in throughout. Being a teacher has never looked so sexy. Yeah, right. Having been a teacher myself, I can attest that it is the educational system itself that keeps this fantasy of star educators from ever coming true. Pro athletes preparing for their sport as children, often driven by admiration for successful sports heroes, and excel past high school and or college if they have extremely high natural aptitude for their discipline, some of which is strictly genetic. For instance, professional baseball hitters have off the charts supervision for seeing the seams on a baseball traveling 90 miles an hour. Additionally, athletes practice their sport under the gaze of experienced professionals and perform in front of crowds, their every move scrutinized by trainers, coaches, and fans. Their performance is measured by hard statistics, and those numbers are ranked objectively against others in their field. The teacher preparation system is, as has been detailed and backed up by research for years, designed to attract low performers through substandard admission criteria for teacher training programs. In 2014, the National Council on Teacher Quality found that, quote, prospective teachers are almost half as likely as students in other majors to graduate with grade-based honors, and that using evidence from more than 500 higher education institutions that turn out nearly half of the nation's new teachers each year, we find that in a majority of institutions, 58%, grading standards for teacher candidates are much lower than for students in other majors on the same campus. Once out of teacher training programs, which generally do not offer sustained direct instruction on classroom management, academic rigor, or evidence-based testing and evaluation methods, teachers do not ply their trade under the watchful eye of accomplished educators. Yes, there are mentors for student teachers, but they are rarely accountable for instruction or systematic, deep evaluations of their students' performance. Most of the time, they aren't even in the room for the majority of an internship. Almost all teachers work alone, without day-to-day support, guidance, or evaluation. Teaching is considered a learn-as-you-go craft, not a profession to be adequately prepared for. This is probably why so many teachers quit within 5 years of getting a teaching job. And just ask the teachers' unions whether they would mind if teachers were videotaped for the purposes of monitoring, evaluation, and improvement. They'd freak out at you enough that you wouldn't dare ask if teachers would perform in public via streaming video that administrators or parents could monitor. That happened at a high school near me. Same goes for statistics and other objective assessments of student achievement. Grades and test scores are already hated measures that are criticized for not including intangibles such as student joy, teacher impact, and emotional safety. Lastly, pro athletes sign contracts but are generally able to either renegotiate them or wait them out to take on more lucrative engagements. The teacher's tenure system, however, makes it nearly impossible for them to move to schools where they might be rewarded with higher salaries for stronger student achievement without giving up seniority and associated salary entitlements. Plus, teacher unions don't really buy into the idea that some teachers are better than others, or that there could be any way of truly determining excellence in a standardized way. I'm sorry. The premise of teachers being rewarded based on student performance is always an education reform showstopper. It is a wonderful instinct to want teachers to be valued as much as sports heroes, but let's consider why we don't already and advocate for fundamental change. Ouch. That hurt. We're turning now to some letters to the editor of the Decatur Herald and Review. Our first is signed by a Tony Shamblin in Lexington, Kentucky, and it carries the headline, "Bob Falstrom Launched Many Journalism Careers." Like so many others, I was saddened to learn of the death of Bob Falstrom. I first met Bob by telephone in the mid-1950s when I was the 14-year-old sports editor of my hometown newspaper, the Flora Daily News. Bob called me to see if I would join his long list of high school correspondents. I gratefully accepted. Later, I enrolled at Millikan University, where I majored in English and played varsity football and tennis. And fortunately, I worked for Bob in my free hours on the sports desk of the Herald and Review. During my junior year, when I was 19, the Herald offered me a full-time position on the sports staff with the understanding that I would finish my college education, which I did. 5 years later, I became the youngest sports editor in the country of a paper with 100,000-plus circulation, the Evansville, Indiana Sunday Courier and Press. I received back-to-back national awards for outstanding columns while there. For 17 years, I served as editor and/or publisher of the Horseman's Journal, and for 5 years as editor of the Breeders' Cup magazine before taking administrative positions in the horse racing industry. Much of what I learned as a journalist came from Bob Falstrom. He was one of the most concise writers I ever met. I am pleased that I was able to thank him on more than one occasion, and in the introduction of my most recent book, Illinois Iron Man. He will be missed. Again, a letter to the editor signed by Tony Shamblin of Lexington, Kentucky. Our next letter is signed by Charles Frey of Forsyth. Money stops thoughts of 2016 presidential run. I thought of making a run in the 2016 presidential election as an independent, but my super PAC friends and backers couldn't come up with $1 million. Unfortunately, our Social Security checks didn't add up to much. Oh, well, I really didn't need the headache anyway. I'll just stay retired and enjoy life. A letter to the editor from Charles Frey of Forsyth. We're taking a quick dip into the Everyday Cheapskate column, and this is written by Mary Hunt for the Decatur Herald and Review. Dear Mary, I have a beautiful crystal vase that over the years has acquired a buildup of residue that I cannot remove. Do you have a suggestion on how to remove it? Pat. Dear Pat, that buildup is likely calcium, lime, and other materials from years of standing water. You may need to experiment a bit, but I'm sure you can return that vase to its sparkling beauty. Here are two simple and completely harmless methods. Method 1. Start by filling the vase with white vinegar to cover past the murky area. If the vase is large, you can use a mixture of vinegar and water. Allow the vinegar to sit for a couple of hours. Swish the liquid around to see how much of the film has been loosened. If the film layer is thick and not coming loose, add 1/4 cup of uncooked rice. Cover and shake the container. The rice will scrub to loosen the tough layers. Use the bottle brush to remove any remaining film from the interior of the vase. Empty the vase and wash with mild soap. Dry completely. Method 2. Fill the vase with water and drop in 1 or 2 denture tablets, depending on the vase size. Allow to sit and work overnight. In the morning, agitate the container gently to ensure all of the deposits and mineral buildup have come loose. Empty the vase and wash with mild soap and water. Rinse well and dry completely. Those are two ideas. DIY pest control. Dear Mary, in response to your recent post, do-it-yourself pest control for home and garden, I wanted to let you know about another really cheap method using Taurus SC with 9.1% fipronil, which contains the same active ingredient as Frontline for dogs, but is way cheaper. The cost might seem a bit steep at $50, but a 20-ounce container, when properly mixed with water, makes 25 gallons of product that will kill fleas, ants, cockroaches, spiders, bedbugs, houseflies, and everything else. It's harmless to humans, dogs, cats, and birds, and has a stable shelf life of years when stored in the dark. Simply mix with water and pour into a sprayer. It will kill an entire ant's nest for good when sprayed around the nest, not directly into it. Under the sink and behind the toilet, it remains effective for at least a year. You can spray your drapes or blinds without staining them, and you won't have any more houseflies indoors for the next 6 months, because they always go to the windows where you've sprayed, and then they die. I may sound like a salesman for Taurus SC, but I'm not. I've just used it for years and know for certain just how effective and inexpensive it is to do my own pest control. Signed by Doug. Dear Doug, thanks for the information. I need to make sure my readers understand that Taurus SC is not a substitute for Frontline for dogs, as it should not be sprayed on or ingested by animals or humans for any purpose. It should be used, as you describe, to treat the areas that pesky insects frequent. My limited research says that the toxicity of fipronil on humans has been tested in numerous studies with no adverse effects. That being said, I recommend that readers should always conduct their own due diligence before proceeding with any kind of do-it-yourself pest control. Okay, and on that helpful little note, we're out of time for news from the Decatur area for Thursday, August 6th. This has been Ruth McCauley. As always, it's been a pleasure to read with you, and I look forward to reading with you again next week. Until that time, y'all take care.